Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim, and Chris. On today's tour catch up,
Nadal turns the tables on Alex de Minaur,
Sabalenka survives a couple of scares,
and we're joined by sports reporter Molly McKelvey.
Chris, today is the 29th of April and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. It's a very special episode today because whilst Kim is at softball training, we are joined by Molly McKelvey, freelance sports reporter, formerly of The Telegraph, with pieces in recent weeks in The Telegraph and The Guardian covering sexism in Madrid, a sit-down with Boris Becker and the WTA Finals moving to Saudi Arabia on BBC Women's Hour. As well as all that, she is also the host of the Off the Bench podcast, where she even got to sit down with Billie Jean King. Molly, you're clearly a person in demand. So thank you for taking the time to join us at Tennis Weekly HQ. I just want to say, on behalf of everyone, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, you guys. Really delighted to be asked on.
I'm excited because you're joining us from Spain, and I'm hearing the weather is lovely out there. You've actually relocated out there. You're doing a bit of freelancing. And in my head, I'm always just thinking, is it just sun, sangria, and more freedom? Is that the vibe going on?
Well, usually the vibe, but it's pretty rainy and stormy here at the minute where I'm in Barcelona, and it's pretty grim outside. So usually I would say yes to all three, but currently, the weather's not playing ball.
Have you taken the London weather with you to Spain?
Well, it looks like this right now, but it, genuinely, it's been stunning the rest of the time I've been here. So it's just a small blip. I hope it's not going to stay. But yeah, it's been great to be in Spain, especially these last couple of weeks where tennis has come to Spain too. So it's been great to be busy and to have the tennis on my doorstep, really, because it had been a while since I was last at an event.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, like the clay swing has begun. There just seems to be so many tournaments in Spain. We saw you on your socials in Barcelona last week, Madrid this week. I know you've been covering a little bit of that. I mean, you've got also the added hype and excitement of Rafa returning to the tour. What's been the feeling whilst you've been going to events? Has it been whirlwind?
Yeah, totally. I mean, in terms of Rafa's return, it felt like it was just such a buzz to be back at any event, but then to have Nadal making his long-awaited return, and long-awaited return in Spain, felt really special. I'd never been to either the Barcelona Open or the Madrid Open, and like the atmosphere was mad at both of them. In Barcelona, obviously, it's an event and a club which he holds really dear. It's a really cool event, very chic, very stylish, and the atmosphere was absolutely mad from the day that. The day that he went out of the tournament, like the buzz on that day was crazy around the whole event. And then the next day it was kind of like, oh, okay, you can tell Nadal's not here anymore because, the crowd's kind of dwindled a little bit. Yeah. A lot of the journalists like said, see ya. In Madrid it was similar. I mean, it's a much bigger event, obviously, there, the Caja Mágica, which is completely different vibe to like a local tennis club. The fans are really showing up for him. So it was very cool to see, and just a really interesting story to follow. He's so cagey about giving information about where his body's at, but we're getting to see it on the court, which is really brilliant. And hopefully he'll be able to show us a bit more for the next few weeks.
Absolutely. And I do think something very interesting, we were going to have you on last week, but he obviously lost to Alex de Minaur. And this week, the opposite has happened, which we'll be covering later. But we were going to ask you a few kind of important questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit better and kind of where your tennis angle is. Like, are you a Nadal fan like Kim is? Are you like myself and it's all things WTA? Well, Joel's actually getting more WTA as well. But he's always...
Andy Murray fan at heart.
Yes, Andy Murray fan at heart. But I'd say that you're more of an Ostapenko stan now than probably a Murray fan. But Molly, who's your favourite players? Who are you following most on the tour?
I mean, look, I got into tennis, like, yeah, when I was a kid, like, because of Serena Williams. Serena Williams was the vibe, obviously, for me. That is a totally unoriginal answer because there's so many people who would say that. I was a Roger and a Serena gal when I was a kid watching tennis. I mean, right now, it's hard. I can't really call myself a fan because when you're, like, reporting on it, it's hard to be, like, a fan. You've got to be impartial, don't you? But I mean, I'm always rooting for someone
you're,
like her.
You're safe here, Molly. Don't worry. Look, you can be the fan. You can be the fan on the
show. You can say Raducanu.
You can't be the fan. But look, I'm always rooting for Coco Gauff because I just like think she's totally amazing. Like she's such an interesting like person, character. Her opinions are really interesting. She brings so much energy to the court. Love her. And lots of what she represents. And I mean, right now, I feel like everyone is just in the rooting for the aging underdog. Sorry to Nadal, but like everyone
wants...
Anyone
over 37.
Yeah, but everyone wants kind of that fairy tale ending for a lot of these players who have been real fan favorites. Who've got like Andy Murray, obviously, as well, Nadal. Even watching like Danielle Collins, she's not aging, okay, she's 30, but like she's on her way out because she wants to leave the sport. And watching her streak recently, it's like, okay, this is an incredible story. It would be great if she had this fire, continued this kind of fire end of her career, end of season, kind of last season kind of run, because she's amazing, and it would be really cool to watch that kind of continue, and maybe for her to have a big run at a slam or something. But yeah, that's a long story short. But a lot of the narratives I'm kind of a fan of right now are just lots of retiring players. It's kind of strange.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you are a sports reporter, so you do need the story. So where the story is, Molly will follow, it sounds like. But in terms of your favourite tournament, another one just to get your take on quickly, is there a favourite tournament you've attended? And if we're getting into the real nitty-gritty, is there a favourite court that you have?
Okay, so...
You can say Wimbledon. People are always scared to say Wimbledon, by the way.
No, I was scared to say Wimbledon, but I'm going to give you two.
So I mean, you've already said Serena, Venus, Williams, so you might as well say the obvious answer and go Wimbledon.
No, I'm going to give you two, though, because when I went to Rome, that was just... I mean, Rome. I covered Rome once and was only there for a few days, and I wouldn't say it's the best tournament to cover as a journalist because it's incredibly chaotic. But as a fan, I'd say that it's such a cool tournament. It's
so vibey, isn't it?
Yeah, on a vibey level, I would go to Rome. But then, like, what can I say? It has to be Wimbledon is my favourite tournament. There's nothing like it. And favourite court, I'm not going to say centre court because that is so boring.
Court 18, are you going to say?
I said it. I was going to say 18. There's two reasons.
Yeah,
I love 18.
Yes.
Because I love the seats that you sit in as a journalist. Are like right. Obviously, all of them are kind of close, but you sit like right next to where all the players team as well, which is really interesting just because you can kind of see what they're kind of talking to their team about. And also now you can kind of overlook it on the media balcony. And that's quite cool. I watched Katie Bolter last year from the media balcony when the protesters
came. Was Kate Middleton there?
I was there when Kate Middleton was there, but I was also there when the protesters
the jigsaw.
Came onto the court. Yeah, that was quite fun. Nothing to do with tennis, but just because of the...
It's a dramatic court.
The drama.
We
I love the
that.
Drama. So yeah, court 18.
Court 18. Joel, go on this. You've got to ask this question. The final one.
And Molly, final question for our listeners. It's a question we ask every guest who comes onto the show. Very simply, how do you take your cup of tea?
Okay, this is going to be disappointing, but I don't drink tea.
You don't drink tea?
You don't drink tea?
The only tea I drink is, like, I don't drink anything like caffeinated, I don't drink coffee, I don't drink tea. I never really used to like a hot drink either. I don't even like hot chocolate. The only hot drink
what about
I drink...
a hot Vegemite?
This explains why you've left the UK and gone to Spain.
Just stop the cold drinks.
The only hot drink I'll have is like a mint tea. That's the only thing I have.
Okay. Well, a mint tea,
boring.
That's a tea.
Yeah, but it's a herbal thing. You don't put milk in mint tea though, and there's no sugar in it. Well, I don't put sugar in it.
I like a red bush tea, you know? I think that was my answer when I joined. We'll give it to you.
We'll leave it at mint tea then. But yes, okay, right. You're fully
immersed. I can feel the judgment.
Yeah, Joel's moving on quite quickly there. He's quite disappointed.
You are fully inducted into the world of Tennis Weekly. We're going to crack on with the show now. We've got lots and lots to look forward to. We've got a Joel's game later, which I'm very excited to see how you and Chris get on with. But the first half, we're going to be talking about all things Madrid. But before we do get into that, as always, we're going to be talking about our favourite irreverent thing from the week. Now, Chris, I want to start with you. What caught your eye this week on the tennis tour?
Well, I was going to talk about the fact that the WTA has just launched all of these GIFs that they recorded in Indian Wells of all of the players reacting to things. And then I just thought, well, to be honest, none of those GIFs can do justice to Danielle Collins, who's just serving us with all the content this week in Madrid. She's taking on the crowd. She's taking on everybody. And I just think that she had such an iconic interaction with some fans. I think just last night, where she's been getting quite a lot of stick from the crowd. It's been spicy, and it's quite unusual because she's not been playing against Spanish girls, so very unusual. But she said, "You come down here and do what I do. Have some respect." And I always just thought, this is iconic. It's her last year. She's delivering iconic lines that deserve a place above center court. And we've already seen her previously in Rome, where she kind of blew on her racket as though she just shot a bullet. Well, I mean, she's giving us everything and more in Madrid right now.
Yeah, definitely. She's continuing the form, but yeah, I do love this combative Collins. It's not just intimidating the player across the net, it's also intimidating the fans as well.
She'll take you all on.
I'd buy a t-shirt that says "have some respect" on it, exclamation point. I think...
You come down here, have some respect.
Danielle Collins merch, that's got to happen, surely. Right, Molly, what's been your highlight of the week?
I saw... Was it last night or was it today? I think maybe it was today. Medvedev wanted the roof closed and he was chatting to the umpire about it. And the umpire said, "They tell me what to do, it's only what they say." And Medvedev turned around and said, "Who's they? The Illuminati?" And I was like, where does this come from? I just thought that was classic Medvedev, and also classic, just classic tennis. Like, you don't know what's going to come out of players' mouths, and the Illuminati was not on my Madrid Open bingo card. So,
hang on, who are they? Yeah. The Illuminati? Is it not the others from Lost?
I mean, I don't know where Lost reference?
straight over my head.
I feel like I watched Lost, but like that was age. I can't remember any of that, to be honest. But yeah, Medvedev Illuminati is...
You've lost us with that,
Joel. I take the Lost reference back. I thought that was funny, but maybe it's gone over everyone's head apart from mine.
But that's classic Medvedev. I mean, he's had some absolute zingers this year. I mean, he's been doing all sorts. He actually almost pulled down, what was it, the Sun Guard, where it was in Monte Carlo, maybe. But Joel, I think we're all talking about players not necessarily behaving impeccably. And I think you've got another one similar to that.
Yes. And this was on one of the outside courts. I think it was on court 4, late at night, round 1. Corentin Moutet was complaining to the umpire because he wanted to get some coffee brought onto the tennis court, and the umpire was having none of it, saying it wasn't possible and he just needs to get on with things and play his match. But what I did enjoy about this was there was a happy ending here, because a fan must have heard him from the stands and went and got him an espresso shot and gave it to him from the crowd. So,
honestly,
yeah,
Molly would never. She would never have that coffee. It would never be in a situation where she would be doing that.
Would have to be desperate times.
Or you could give them the coffee, actually. If you're not drinking it, maybe that does count.
Yeah, so I was all about kind of, yeah, Corentin Mutu. He's always such a, I mean, interesting player, I guess, to watch. He's so up and down, and you never know, I think, what's next with Mute. But certainly, coffee on a tennis court. I mean, I feel like I'd already be running on adrenaline. I wouldn't need any more, but maybe
Serena's
it was so
did
late.
That first, though. I have to say, Serena Hotman Cup 2015, she asked for an espresso, but actually, because it wasn't an official tour event, she's actually given it. I think she got maybe like lost a set to Panetta in the Hotman Cup.
Well, I had to scroll back because I think Stan Wawrinka also asked for a coffee.
See, but he's sponsored. He's an espresso partner.
So
maybe that's very sneaky and he's been getting some extra deals.
Okay, right. Let's move on to the Madrid Open and let's talk about the tennis we have seen there over the last week or so. We have one of these Masters events, which is over 2 weeks. So we're only covering week one. We're up to the quarterfinal stage for the women and we've got Świątek in the quarterfinals, Haddad Myers there, Madison Keys, Ons Jabeur, Mira Andreeva. I think Elena Rybakina has also just joined them. We've got the blockbuster matchup later of Danielle Collins versus Sabalenka. But Chris, I wanted to come to you first. Who has caught your eye this week in the women's draw on their route to the quarterfinals?
Well, it's pretty much everyone who I didn't predict to do well because most of these names I had going out earlier than this. So I've been very pleasantly surprised by what I've seen. But I would probably say the player that I've been most impressed by is probably Ons Jabeur, that she's actually really picked up her form and she looked very imperious today against Ostapenko. That first set in 17 minutes, which was very impressive.
Was that more Jabeur or was that more Ostapenko being Ostapenko?
Well, I saw the numbers and there was a positive winner differential for Jabeur, whereas Ostapenko was in the negatives, unfortunately. But I mean, it did get more competitive, but still Ons hasn't had that many wins this year. So she's a former champion here, and I would love to see her do well. So I've been rooting for her. And then Madison Keys is also a bit of a surprise package because she's ranked as high as, I think, 16 in the live rankings. And we haven't seen that much of her so far this year. So I think I like the fact there are lots of names we didn't predict and we might be in for a surprise if Iga doesn't win it.
And Molly, what about you? What has caught your eye on the tennis court this week? Which player in the women's draw have you been impressed by?
Well, I mean, the key thing there that you said was if Iga doesn't win it, because, I mean, who's really going to beat Iga? I'm watching her and I'm just thinking she is just...
It's not Sara Seri-Bestormo, I can tell you that.
No one is even, like, challenging her. I mean, it was really interesting because at the beginning of the week in Madrid, she was asked in her, like, pre-tournament press... someone asked her if it was helpful to her that she had lost to Rybakina last week or whenever it was, a week and a half ago now. Was it good that she lost to Rybakina? Because then that's kind of, it's kind of such a rare feeling for her to lose on clay that it kind of would help her problem solve or something throughout this clay court season. And she looked at them like they were mad. It was quite funny because she was just like, why would it be helpful for me to lose to Rybakina? So she is just... in such kind of a focus zone. I guess, but she's just got so much, you can tell when she's on the court, she's got so much focus. She's just kind of looked untouchable. Yeah, sure, she lost to Rybakina a couple of weeks ago, but right now in Madrid, I don't know really who's going to challenge her. But the other kind of talking point is Ons Jabeur doing well is good for everyone. It's good for tennis because people love seeing the bit of variety that she brings. She's a big fan favorite. And I mean, it's just been a bit painful to watch how hard like her run has been this season so far. Just like she wasn't, I don't think she'd won back-to-back matches until she got to Madrid. So to see her doing well is always good, I think. And
I feel like I got that sense just looking at her player box and her husband just sort of almost like screaming at her and celebrating her last victory, because it's not been a good start really to the season. And Madrid is somewhere where she has had good form in previous years, and it certainly seems to have helped her this year.
And we have to mention she has actually added a Spaniard to her team. I saw this and I couldn't quite believe it, but Fernando Verdasco is part of her team now, one of Kim's favorites as well. So he's been there, and I think a former coach that he used to work with as well. So that's something that I wasn't necessarily aware of. I think it kind of just went under the radar until he appeared in the box. So maybe she's trying some slightly different things, and maybe that's partly why that new energy is kind of what's giving her this positive run in Madrid.
I was just going to say, I think she's brought him in for Madrid specifically. Like you say, it would be interesting to see if like she decides to continue to mix it up if she does well here, because it's clearly brought some sort of boost to her having her game, having someone new. The other thing I was going to say, someone I forgot to mention was Andreeva. Like she's always exciting to watch, and to see her do well is great. I think her win over Paulini, it's kind of a bit of a statement win, I guess, because Paulini's been so she's been more of the informed player. And then Andreeva's she's beaten some decent players on the way, and she's kind of come through a couple of tough tests, in particular against Townsend in the first round. So I was happy to see her get through, and I think she takes on Collins or Sabalenka next, so that would be interesting.
Well, Matthew Futterman, when he was on, he predicted that she'd make a slam final, was it, Joel?
Yeah, I mean, also she's now got Martinez, Muguruza's former coach in her corner.
Everyone's getting a Spaniard.
Yeah, that partnership seems to be gelling, quite quickly. And she's now, I believe, into her first Masters quarterfinal. Another top 20 win. And I think it was also her birthday, so she's now 17 years old. It's not too shabby, is it?
That's pretty good, pretty good. But was there a birthday cake?
Oh no, we need to steer clear, I think, of birthday cakes.
I think maybe they just said no cakes this
year.
We
need to steer clear of birthday cakes at Madrid. But I mean, one other player who I guess we had high hopes for going into the tournament that it didn't really live up to the billing was...
Did we have high hopes, Joel? Who had high hopes?
Britain's own Emma Raducanu. Chris, I definitely know you had high hopes.
I don't remember this.
I believe you had predictions of her getting to the final, but she was unceremoniously dumped out by the Argentinian qualifier Maria Lourdes Carla, 6-2, 6-2. This was quite interesting because Raducanu was quite honest afterwards, talking about the fact that she was mentally and emotionally exhausted. But at the same time, Anne Kiofavong, Billie Jean King Cup GB captain, she said that willingness just didn't seem evident throughout the match. So to me, there was a little bit at odds in terms of the feedback there. And Chris, what did you make of those comments? Do you think they were fair to Raducanu, or do you think that was a bit out of order?
I think it's slightly uncharacteristic of Kiofavong to kind of talk about one of the players in her team in that sort of way. I think if you're watching that match, Emma was barely making the ball into the court at times, and she was missing by a long way. It did feel like she didn't necessarily want to be on the court that day. And I'm not saying that that's what was going in her brain, but that was the tennis that she was able to bring on the day. So ultimately, I can see the comments being interpreted as being much more damning than they actually are. But I do think if someone watched the match, it would make perfect sense, because it definitely wasn't a leave it all on the court attitude. It wasn't find a way to win. It was a case where it was almost get off the court quickly and we move on, which is not really the Raducanu that we saw at the Billie Jean King Cup. And the reason why I got so excited was the fighting qualities were back, the swagger was back, and I really could not have predicted that this would have happened.
Molly, were you surprised by the level that Raducanu showed, given the form that she had showed against France in the Billie Jean King Cup tie for GB?
I was surprised. I mean, it was a bad day at the office for her, for sure. Like,
should she have played it, Molly, do you think? Should she have skipped Madrid, maybe?
Not necessarily. You kind of don't know what's going to happen until you get on that call, I guess. And she spoke a bit afterwards about how not having her coach in her box because Nick Cavite was... He had a prior commitment that he couldn't miss, so he couldn't travel to Madrid with her. And so she said, like, afterwards she kind of recognized that maybe she'd missed, like, having his input. So I think there were a combination of factors, but, like, it was a bad loss, but it doesn't really feel like the end of the world. I feel like she's overall kind of gained during this clay season so far, for sure, because... Mm. At least she's on the court and she's not injured anymore. I think that's kind of just I know it's like a low bar, but that's kind of where I'm at when I'm watching her. I want her to be playing well, obviously, but you want her to be playing at all so that she can at least have a shot at improving her ranking and getting back to kind of the level that we know she can play at. So, I mean, yeah, it was a bad loss, but that's the beauty of tennis, I guess. You've got another tournament to get to next. You always get another chance. So,
and you know, one other player we spoke about, Raducanu, playing so well against France in the Billie Jean King Cup. Caroline Garcia, also this week. There were some interesting comments, coming out from her in relation to the Madrid format and the fact it is a 2-week event. She basically said, "You're waiting all the time. You don't do much. It's frustrating. I haven't found anyone who identifies with this format." I translated that myself.
How is
English.
Your French, Joel?
Yeah, I
know. Identifies with the my format.
my GCSE French. That was, I will say, that was courtesy of Google Translate.
Not sponsored.
This is another Masters event that is in this 2-week format. We had the Sunshine double out in Indian Wells and Miami. Those were both 2 weeks. This is 2 weeks. Rome is going to be 2 weeks. It's interesting to hear some of the players and Garcia voicing the fact that it's just a lot of waiting around to do. I mean, it's hard not to disagree with it. Does it still feel like these events are just going on forever?
I mean, what round are we on? It feels like it's been how many weeks? We're 2 weeks in and someone's in round three. It's very confusing. And like Nadal was still about to play his round three match. And some of the women's players were into the quarterfinals because they started a day later. So if you think about the preparation, you've got to get there ahead of the tournament. You can play two matches in a week. It's basically what Garcia is playing and saying, sorry. And I think that's also something which for the fans, I think we've talked about this widely, that it's not as good a format as it was previously because you do have to wait for the players to see them every day. You see them every other day, but to hear a player talk about it this openly, I think it's pretty clear that for Garcia and probably for a lot of players, the nature of not actually getting the momentum that you might be wanting is actually probably putting a stop to some of the players' enjoyment of these tournaments.
And Molly, do you think it makes these events harder to win? The fact that they are longer, these players have to be on for longer. Do you think it makes these Masters events like even more of a challenge to come out on top?
I think it depends who you are and what you kind of feed off. Like Caroline Garcia might be someone who prefers to have the momentum of playing every day, but then you've got someone like Nadal, for example, who's going to be kind of welcoming every break he can get. So I think it depends who you are. But what I can say is that as a fan experience, also as a journalist, harder to follow is not going to be good for people kind of getting into tennis because, like you say, I don't know, every day you're kind of asking, what round is this player on? What round is that player on? What part of the draw is at this stage? What part of the draw isn't at that stage? So it makes it just trickier. I also think it's kind of strange because I feel like the Grand Slams are 2 weeks for a reason. They kind of have those big slots in the calendar because they're so important to the calendar. They're such important events. And obviously, these
and it's best of five. It's more time on court.
Well, yeah, on the men's side, I guess. But yeah, but I think that the tricky thing about these events going longer is that it just clogs up the calendar, and players are constantly crying out for the scheduling to be easier on them. And I guess having such long events doesn't make it easier for them to fit in breaks and things like that.
Good for a conference, maybe, Molly. Not good for the players, then, in that sense. If there's all this downtime, maybe they can consult the players on some of the big questions that are currently in the sport. But one thing I was just going to say on that is that players who do want to play, we get this weird situation. I'm not sure if you've noticed this as well, Molly, but now there's the challenger draws are out for next week. And I think there are four top 50 players playing in a challenger because they've got knocked out of Madrid. So it's almost like then there are two tournaments going on. And from a journalistic perspective, I mean, the player that you went to Madrid to follow might now be playing a challenger in France somewhere rather than being at Madrid, where obviously the bigger story is and there are more points. So it's a bit of a conundrum, really.
I feel like it's just going to become a question we're always going to bring up now with every 2 week Masters event, because it doesn't feel like they're going anywhere. But at the same time, I mean, if fans are sort of doubting it, and it sounds like the players are as well, yeah, it feels like it's just going to be an ongoing debate. I mean, moving on to the men's side, we're not at the quarterfinal stage. We're at the round four stage. We've got so far Felix Auger-Aliassime, Casper Ruud, Daniil Medvedev, Alexander Bublik, Rafael Nadal, Lehechka, Hurkacz, Fritz, Cerundolo, Zverev, Rublev, Griekspoor, Struff, Alcaraz, all through to round four. I feel like I want to ask you who you've been impressed by, but to be honest, I just want to get to talking about Rafa, because this is probably his last Madrid Open. He came through very easily in his first round match against Darwin Blanche, and then had a reverse against Alex de Minaur, who he played in Barcelona. Now, Molly, you were in Barcelona. You saw this match. You saw the defeat by Nadal to de Minaur. And now we got the reverse in Madrid. Did that surprise you when that result happened, or what was going through your head?
Well, I think when everyone saw the draw, they were kind of like, oh, that's going to be tricky for Nadal to kind of turn around so quickly. But then watching him play de Minaur in Madrid was... He completely kind of ramped things up in terms of his intensity, the physicality, the speed he was bringing in his serve went up. He definitely brought his intensity way up compared to where it was in Barcelona. I think in Barcelona, he was really just testing things out. He was completely like, he was happy he'd like pushed de Minaur quite close in that first set. And it was like, okay, this is maybe where my limit is right now. So to see him then completely turn things around in Madrid was really interesting. I also think the aura he and the atmosphere around him, and obviously the aura that Nadal has playing clay, playing in his luck potentially and probably his last season, I think that is affecting the players he's playing. Like, I feel like Alex de Minaur was not playing as well in Madrid as he was in Barcelona. The big arena, the atmosphere was, the atmosphere was great in Barcelona, but in Madrid, I think things kind of, there was more belief, I think, in Nadal himself. And that already translated to the crowd too.
He's had different tests. He's had a test to see where he is based on the week previously where he got that loss. I mean, did everyone just hold their breath that entire tiebreak against de Minaur? I think even was it the king of Spain was there holding his breath. I think it's whatever your views are on Nadal, it is quite the spectacle that's sort of heading through tennis right now. And Joel, I've got to ask you as well in terms of the level, but I mean, we couldn't tell much from his first round match as to how he was playing, could we?
No, and I was actually going to ask you both about that first round match, because it did raise eyebrows. I mean, it was, I think, the widest gap in terms of age between two competitors in Masters history, between Nadal and Darwin Blanche. And I thought what was quite interesting, something we touched on last week, was the wildcard situation with Madrid is interesting because it's an event that's owned by IMG. And they basically used the wild cards to favour IMG backed players. And this Blanche kid was one of the he was one of the beneficiaries of this. And you know, you just saw that match, and it was like love and one. Nadal afterwards said he didn't really know how well he was playing. It wasn't really much of a test. Does it sort of bring into spotlight the wild card situation, and like, should it be a question, or does it really matter if IMG own the event, they can choose who they want? Did you feel it was fair to see someone like a Darwin Blanche in the draw, given his ranking, given the fact that a lot of people would say he probably shouldn't have deserved it?
At 16, I think you have to think this is a bit premature to make your debut at a Masters. I mean, it's not unheard of. Miami does a similar thing with wild cards for the people who sponsor the tournament as well, who run it. But I think, would it be a good experience starting here versus starting at a 250, where there might be a relationship to give a wild card in that sense? But I mean, you never know who they're going to face, and it's always tricky to know who to give the wild cards to. But my question is probably less, should they have given him the wild card in this sense, but more, should they have given more Spaniards the wild card, like Martinez that we talked about previously?
Bautista Agut.
Exactly.
He wasn't happy at all, because he had to come through, you know, qualifying. And
a 16-year-old who's never played on a big stage before, or at this level, gets a wild card because of kind of who they're represented by. So that does feel like the hard graft of the tour is not necessarily being rewarded for some of those players. And we saw it with Rodionova at the Australian Open. And I think that the hard graft these players are doing week in, week out on the tour has more than earned them a wild card. So that's more my issue, rather than the fact that a young player, a future talent, got the wild card. But at the same time, you have to give them to the players who are playing the best tennis at the moment, is what I believe.
And I mean, a couple of players I just want to point out, Andrei Rublev and Holger Rune. I mean, both have had fairly, you know, iffy patches of late, I would say. It seems that Rublev has, righted that. You know, he's through to, round four. He had a very good win against Bagnis, 6-1, 6-4. And, Madrid is a place that he comes and expects to do well at. And it looks like he has corrected some dodgy patch in his season. However, Chris, Holger Rune, he's probably the biggest men's player who's out of the draw so far. He lost to Talon Griekspoor 6-4, 4-6, 6-3. It leaves Rune 18-10 on the season. What's going on here? Because I feel like each week I'm sort of filled with the optimism that he can do well. I thought he played very well in Monte Carlo, very unlucky against Jannik Sinner. But what's going on in his season?
I mean, he's a bit like your Raducanu, in the sense that you always predict him to do very well, and he isn't quite coming up with the goods on the court at the moment. But it's tricky. I think it's a mindset thing. I think he knows that he's good enough to, he's good enough to take a set of Jannik Sinner, but I think he does struggle with the way to bring out the best in his game and the way to channel some of the frustrations that he has at his game and when he's not playing well into a positive result at the end of it. So I think, again, he's a very, very dangerous player who obviously had a big breakout and then cemented his place inside the top 10. But now, not having kind of a big result for a considerable period of time, you can see why
he's not won a title this season.
Yeah, and obviously the early loss in at the BMW Open as well, a title that he was two-time defending champion at. It's not a positive wave of momentum, but he's a very talented player. I mean, he's unbelievably talented, and you feel like it's almost like an arm wrestle that goes on in his head each match, where he can expend a lot of mental energy in situations that he didn't have to make that tricky for him. But the Navone match, that was an unbelievable tennis match to watch. So I think he's still definitely making the highlights real, and we all know he's more than capable, but I do think he needs to focus more of his attention on getting those easy wins and not making everything such a battle with the crowd, with his opponents, with his team. I think
with social media.
It was social media, but I mean, I kind of enjoy that. But I think pick your battles and try and get over the line in two, because he shouldn't be losing sets to some of these guys.
Yeah, and Molly, he's got lots of points to come up to defend. Rome, Roland Garros, Queens, Wimbledon. Are you worried for Holger Rune at all, or do you think he'll be able to get it back in order for Roland Garros?
I think that's the big thing. The points, like you say, that he has to defend are really key right now. And I wonder if he's feeling that pressure a bit. He really expects a lot of himself, like Chris is saying. Because even like you mentioned, like taking a set off Jannik Sinner feels like a really big win at the minute. But then he's playing against maybe lower ranked players and not performing in the same way. So it's kind of like, he maybe needs to find a way to play at his top level, even when he's not playing against the top level on the other side of the court, if you get me. I think he's got a lot of work to do for these few weeks to make sure he defends those points and, feeling the pressure maybe, and that's kind of spilling over on the court. But he's always so interesting to watch. So equally...
entertaining, isn't he?
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him like having a good week and turning things around. It seems like he's kind of in a little battle with himself, like I think you mentioned, Chris. He makes you want to switch on the TV and watch him, though, doesn't he? So,
wish him a happy birthday. I just remembered Molly. I've just slated him, and it's his birthday. His 21st birthday today, so it's gonna be a happy birthday.
We'll delay and put it out the next day, so it's not his birthday.
Okay,
right, right.
I hope he got
cake.
Well,
actually, one before we go to a break.
Oh no,
one...
he left before the cake. Maybe that's why he didn't want to get involved again.
Yeah, the cake gate got too much for them.
Yeah.
Well, one battle I just want to point out before we do go to a break is at Madrid. It's the battle between the players and the dark side and the light side on the main court. Because I don't know if you guys have both seen on TV, but the lighting situation on the main court at the Madrid Open, it's one of the worst, I think, possibly the worst, on the tour.
These images that you're sharing, and we'll post some of them to our social media. I mean, you literally can't see players.
What's going on?
Whole players are missing. But you've been to the event as well, Joel, haven't you? I think was it for the Davis Cup a few years ago, or whatever the event? I can't remember what the event was.
Yes,
but...
yes. Me and Kim were there, and
Could you see the ball? Could you see the players?
We could, because the roof was on.
Because
it was towards the end of the year, the roof was on, and. You know, it makes me think, like, you know, a lot of events, they talk about getting a roof, you know, for the weather and so play can continue if there's a rain or a storm. I feel like for Madrid, they need a roof just so they don't have any lighting issues.
Or get a roof for the TV audience at home.
Yes.
It really makes sense, does it? But yeah, they need it.
It's such a strange venue. I wasn't a huge fan of it. I went from like a really plush kind of tennis club with tons of history to this like big metal box in the south of the city. Mm. Not a big fan. The shadows are just just.
Is it better, Molly, to be in the shadow, or is it better to be in the sun from a viewing perspective?
I mean, it was freezing either way, so it felt like the middle of winter. I mean, I know it's not been that hot across Europe, and I won't go on about the weather, but like it was cold in that in the Caja Mágica, and a few people told me, like, when I was the week before, I told people I was going to Madrid, they were like, make sure you bring a puffer jacket, because even if it looks sunny, it will be cold in that venue. And Can confirm it was cold.
Good advice.
Yeah, the shadows are just grim, aren't they, for watching on TV. So, something has to be done. Like you say, there's players going missing.
Yes, we're all in agreement.
Yeah, it looks like part of the court is missing. But maybe we need to get on the phone to maybe we need to get on the phone to Feliciano Lopez, talk to him about
the architects.
The roof.
They've been and gone, Joel.
They've been and gone. I know. We need to get them back. We need to get a refund, I think. But we're going to take a quick break now. But do join us in the second half, where we will be discussing Daria Kasatkina being given guarantees about her safety should she qualify for the WTA Tour Finals in Saudi Arabia, the revamped format for the Billie Jean King Cup Finals in Seville, and we look ahead to week two of the Madrid Open. So do not go anywhere.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast, and now we're going to move on to a little quiz with the Tennis Weekly podcast, and it is time, Chris and Molly, for a bit of Joel's game.
Are you ready, Molly? And do you have any idea what this might involve?
I'm quite scared. I'm not good at quizzes, so this could go down badly.
Not a pub quiz girl, no?
I'm a pub quiz girl, but when I don't have like the pressure of an audience, if you get me. So this is nerve-wracking.
And our audience, they will tell us if they did better than us, and quite often they do.
I'm sure. I have no doubt.
Well, this week's edition is Joel's Game, which for you and our listeners is basically higher, lower, or same with career high rankings of tennis players.
Oh,
so,
gosh.
For example, I could give you a tennis player.
Molly, this is maybe not your section. Is this what I'm hearing? That wasn't a confident noise I heard. I'm not sure.
No, that was a, oh my God.
We're in it together, though. We do play as a team. Okay, so that's good. Something. And I'm also not great at this. This is my worst type of quiz that we do, isn't it, Joel?
Yes. But as you said, you get to work together on this one. And actually, I've been quite nice, I think, this week, because it is themed. And this themed edition of Joel's Game is WTA top 10 ranked players. So there's a little clue for you to begin with.
Oh, goodness. This is going to be tricky, isn't it? They're all going to be within such a short range.
Yeah, they are.
So I'm going to give you your starting player, which is Patty Schnieder.
Great.
Okay.
So there's no, as always, no skin in the game just yet, but Patty Schnieder, career high ranking. It's in somewhere in the top 10. What number do you think?
Chris, well, I'm gonna give you this one to go to start with.
Well, I'm actually...
Is this a sign of things to come, Molly?
No. We're very much a team. But Molly knew that Patty Schnieder and I go way back because of her battles with Daniela Handshakova. So I actually believe I know this. I actually do think it's number 7.
Oh, wow. So okay.
There are no points for this, though.
There are no points. There are no points, but that is bang on, Chris. Very well done, Patty.
Should we stop now? This is done.
No, we cannot. We actually haven't even started.
And how many do you have to get right, Joel? Just so that everyone knows,
you have to get 6 correct in
six.
A row.
Yep. In a row. Right, okay. Oh my God.
6 points.
Yeah, I know.
Yep. So right, Patty Schnieder, career high 7. Your next player is Aga Radwanska.
Okay,
higher,
I know
lower
this.
Or same than career high 7.
What are we going for?
I'm pretty sure her career high was 2.
We're saying, let's do it, higher.
That is correct. Very good. Yes.
Okay, 1.
Radwanska career high number 2. So yeah, 1 point.
Excellent,
to Chris
Molly.
And Molly.
I don't know where that information came from, but it was stored somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, this is how this game works. Things you didn't know, you didn't need to know. You did need to know, sorry, yeah.
Daniela Handshakova.
Easy.
Higher,
I've already
lower,
mentioned her.
Or same.
My favourite player of all time, career high number 5.
That is correct, yes.
She was never world number one,
Joel. It is lower. That is 2 points. So you're on your way.
To 6 is still a long way off.
Okay, your next player is Nadia Petrova.
That is a good question.
God, that's hard.
She had that season where everyone thought she was going to win the French, I remember. She had a
higher,
great play season.
Lower or same?
I think she's been higher.
Do you think she's been like 4?
I think she's been maybe 3. I don't think she's been 2.
Okay.
She never won a slam.
No, she didn't. Go with that. That sounds good to me.
But I do think higher than 5. That's what matters, right? Yep, we're saying higher.
That is correct. Yes. Woo,
good job, Chris.
Nadia Petrova.
This is going quite well.
Career high 3. So, Chris,
you've been bang on.
I actually think... Very surprising. I think normally we don't do top 10, and I'm normally about 20 places out, Molly, when it's outside of top 10.
I thought it was going to be harder because they're going to be so tight. We'll see.
Yeah.
Next player. Marion Bartoli.
What are you thinking, Molly?
I think her career... I don't know where I'm getting this from, but I think her career high was... 8? Is that
way
off?
I do think it's lower.
It's lower.
I was
going to
say
3.
7. I really don't know.
I think it's lower than 3. Because
I think she obviously won Wimbledon and then she bounced. So what number were we on? I've forgotten.
We were 3. On 3.
Oh,
weren't we?
So lower than 3.
Lower,
definitely
lower
than 3.
Lower.
Yeah.
Okay, lower.
That is correct. Yes. Marion Bartoli, career high 7.
Ooh,
wonderful.
Okay. So that is 4 points. 2 points away from completing Joel's game. Your next player is Francesca Schiavone.
Ooh, that's really tricky. My gut said 7.
Okay, so we're saying same.
Also, like, we should kind of be fun and just say same at this point.
Yeah, let's say same. He must have thrown a same there.
Either way, we'll say same.
Same?
Yeah.
Oh, is it going to be 6? I don't know.
Incorrect. It's same.
What is it?
It's higher.
Ooh,
and
how high?
If you had said 6... you would have been incorrect. She's actually been a career high 4.
Wow.
In the world.
Shocked.
Wow.
So there you go.
I am shocked by that as well, but I think she had a decent run at a couple of the other slams. But congratulations to her. Sorry for underestimating to all of our Italian fans.
You were very close. You were very, very close to completing Joel's game. But
that was just to end the game, Joel.
No,
that was
cigar.
We said same.
We did well.
I did have one player left, and it was Yelena Dokic.
Oh, I think she's been to 4.
Was she 4 or 5?
So we would have gone higher. No, we wouldn't. 4. 4 must be the same. Joel finished on the same.
Oh. I did finish on the same.
That's
that
a horrible
was the same. That
you tried
was
to
the
play
same.
The mind game.
I did. You played the mind game too early, though.
We did.
Yeah. That was fun, though.
Lesson learned.
Yeah, we did a good effort.
Yeah, lesson better learned. Than I thought.
A very good, very good debut, Molly.
You're going to have to come on complete Joel's game, I think.
Team effort. It's all a team effort. If we did badly, it's a team effort. If we do well, team effort.
Right. Well, let's move on. Let's move on to what we have in the mailbag this week. And we had Harriet on Twitter get in touch with the show. And Harriet asked us this. Hello, Tennis Weekly. With the clay season now in full swing, which do you think is the best clay event from a fan experience perspective? Love the show as always. Keep it up. So, guys, any immediate reactions?
Is this like speed round?
Yeah. Okay, let's go for it. Actually, yeah. Molly, I just want one tournament. What are you going for? Clay tournament, best fan experience.
Rome.
Yeah. I'd say Rome as well. I've got to be honest. Well, maybe Rome as a 2-weeker. No, I haven't done that. I've done Roma's 1 week. But if I had to say something other than that, it's so hard. I just love the French Open.
You if can say allowed. The French Open.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's literally my favourite slam as well.
Fair.
I'm surprised you didn't say the Santiago 250 out in Chile.
I was going to say Rouen, because that's obviously where Sloane won, but I haven't been.
Rouen came up in my pub quiz last night because Rouen is where Joan of Arc was burned at the stake in France.
Oh, wow.
Which I had no idea about it. I just thought it was a tennis tournament on the WTA tour, but alas.
And I actually learnt that through Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova's Instagram stories.
Well, I'm sure if Kim was here, I think she might have said Monte Carlo, maybe.
She loves Monte Carlo.
I've not been to many clay events, so I don't feel like I have actually a...
You love the grass or indoor. Indoor, yeah. You have a Billie Jean King Cup tie.
Mm. Yeah, I'm going to take your advice. I need to get out to some more clay tournaments, I think. But
Well, you were supposed to come to Rome, listeners. I'm going to put him on
that
the spot.
That is very
here.
True. I didn't. I had to go to a wedding, but I
you
didn't
had to cancel on me.
I was there. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Right. Moving on. We've got a couple of talking points this week in our second half. We've got to start, guys, with Daria Kasatkina, who has come out over the last couple of days and said that she has been given guarantees about her safety should she compete in Saudi Arabia at the WTA Tour finals. I mean, immediately hearing this, I'm like, I can't believe we're in a position where she has to actually be given guarantees in the first place. But I mean, Molly, what was your reaction to this news and, you know, all this sort of spotlight on Kasatkina? You know, should she get to the tour finals? What did you make of this?
I think it's hard for her to be the player, I guess, that is being asked about this whenever the Saudi question comes up. I think it seems like she's kind of softened to the idea of it, maybe because she's had those guarantees. It seems like she's kind of become a bit more accepting to it. I don't think she's alone in that either. There seems to be a lot more openness. I mean, I feel like in tennis, it hasn't been that much pushback from players in terms of Saudi involvement in the tour. It's been rare to hear any players kind of say, oh, I'm definitely not going. But everyone does seem more open to it. I think in part that might be because we see it happening in so many other sports, but also in part because Saudi involvement in tennis is kind of already here. We've got the WTA finals obviously going to Saudi Arabia for the next 3 years. But then even in Madrid, like, you walk into the event, you go through the turnstiles at the entrance, and the first stall, like kind of advertising kind of little stall and promotional thing that you see is the PIF, which is the Saudi Investment Fund kind of logo. It's everywhere. It's the main sponsor in Madrid. So like at the same time, players, I think the time for players to push back has passed because it's kind of, it's already happening, I guess. And
it is the system now.
Yeah, so it's one of those
establishment.
Yeah, it's one of those things. When I saw her comments, they didn't really surprise me. And the fact that she's had those guarantees is good. Obviously, great that she's going to be safe there. But at the same time, those guarantees aren't afforded to people who live there. So it's just a wider issue that we all know about in sport at the moment, and tennis is kind of just following suit, I guess.
And I mean, Chris, even if guarantees are put in place, like regardless of that, would you feel safe as a competitor out there if you're Daria Kasatkina?
I think as a competitor, there is a luxury that's attached to that, in the sense of there being the reassurances and guarantees that she's been given. I mean, as someone who identifies as queer myself, I'm not going to be rushing to visit this tournament because those such guarantees are not the same for everyone, given the fact that it is not safe there in that sense. So I think it's a shame that we're talking about personal safety in this respect, and we're talking about it from the personal perspective, because I would have hoped, and again, I've hoped this for the men's tour as well, that there would be more said about the fact that they wanted to use the platform in a positive way. I think saying, for example, we see the Saudis now are very into the sport. These are direct quotes. They want to develop the sport. And I think that's something which is maybe financially, but I think they were all definitely showed sort of the same presentation about like the young kids and women actually getting to see the sport, watch it, and to participate. And I think the legacy of this event will be the real thing that will tell. But also, I think we'll need to see what the viewing attendance is like, because will women be able to go and watch this event unless they're with their husband or a partner, or how will they get there if they're not able to drive there or go on public transport by themselves? I mean, it's very much a case where we're skirting around some of the issues here, and we're answering it in relation to one piece, but the wider piece at large, it's, as Molly said, it's a conversation that seems to, we've gone further than the conversation can do justice to the topic now.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, come back to the point, like, it just feels crazy that we're even in this situation that guarantees have to be given. But, you know, maybe we are past the point of a conversation. I mean, something else that's happened this week, Billie Jean King Cup finals are happening in Seville later this year. All of a sudden, this has become a knockout event. Last year it was round robin, and we ended up, you know, with semi-finals then final. But this year it's an extended format over 9 days. It's going to actually briefly overlap with the Davis Cup final 8 as well in Malaga. But the fact, yeah, they've gone from round robin to knockout. What did you make of this, Chris?
Well, I think we all got the same email, you know, on the press email for the ITF, and it was not something we were expecting.
Felt bigger than a press release. It was just like, oh, by the way, PS,
we completely changed
it to a knockout.
Yeah, because I was thinking, I was already kind of excited about the prospect of going and supporting GB and attending the event. We've been before. We do always talk about the flaws with the format. So for listeners who aren't necessarily aware of this, it used to be a round robin, but the round robin was just with 3 teams in each group, which therefore meant you could get into very strange situations where if someone wins 3-0, then another team is almost certainly out and you get dead rubbers here and there. So it definitely was a format that could do with some, I'd say, improvements. But at the same time, once the tournament started and you actually have too many teams, actually, for this to make sense, because 4 teams now have to receive a bye based on their seedings into the quarterfinals, it doesn't make it any less confusing, I don't think, to change it last minute when we could have just done this for next year.
And Molly, what do you think the GB camp are thinking? What do you think's going through Anne Kioffervong's mind when she's reading this press release, seeing the fact that it's now a straight shootout as opposed to a round robin?
She's hoping Emma's not tired.
Yeah, that. And I mean, I think most teams are going to welcome this. I'm basing this on being there last year and seeing that a lot of the players, one, they're tired. Chris, she's going to be tired. All the players were like knackered by the time they get to the Billie Jean King Cup finals. But I think they were like tired by the format, because it just felt like pointless. And it felt like, I mean, it's hard to do round robin. There was only 3 teams in each group. It made it confusing. Yeah. It made it hard to follow. So I really welcome this change. And I think most teams will. I think Anne Kioffervong would welcome this also because it seems like, based on the most recent evidence with players like Katie Bolter and Emma Raducanu in firing form, I think they'd be a real danger. And I think it would benefit them as a team that maybe aren't ranked super high, but are able to get great results from based on the most recent evidence anyway. I think a straight shootout would be good for them. It could give them a real chance to go through. But I think the strange thing is that it's happened mid-tournament, I guess. It's happened mid-season, this change.
Yeah.
I'm kind of confused by that. And I was confused by that. I mean, when the press release dropped in my inbox, I felt like a very bad journalist because I kind of gave it a skim read for a couple of minutes. I think I was traveling at the time. I was getting on a train. And anyway, I then...
One for later. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, one for later. Exactly. Then I went and then I kind of saw some tweets. I was like, oh, I don't think I've read that properly. I went back to it. But yeah, it was very unexpected, I think. I think it will be something that everyone will welcome down the line, but it might be kind of a strange one to have brought in now.
I mean, the first 6 days are also going to clash with the men's ATP finals in Turin. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see, I guess, what the viewing audiences will be like between them, because there's going to be so much tennis on at one point. Like, where are your eyeballs going?
Yeah, and Joel, I mean, I can't believe you haven't said this. You love getting your calculator out to work out who gets to go through and what the situation is. Are you going to miss it? You love a dead rubber as well.
I was going to say, I love a dead rubber. I love a doubles late night dead rubber.
Joel.
In a cold arena with about five other people and watching Carlos Suarez Navarro retire.
He's a real one. He's trying to flex.
3 a.m. with her team and not many other people. But I guess I like it from the sense that, you know, it does make every match live and every, you know, rubber of every tie live, and that is exciting, and I think that will be more appreciated by the fans. But I just think the delivery of it just feels a bit rushed, a bit out of nowhere, and I just wondered if it could have been announced in a way that wasn't going to be delivered in such a bombshell environment.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. Time will tell. I think that's my answer for most things.
Yeah,
right?
Let's see how it goes. I'm going to wait until, I believe the draw is later this week. So if GB get a good draw, I'm all for it. But yeah, if we don't, then I'm against it.
It can lead to heartbreak. But you're telling me that you'll be watching the dead rubbers at the Billie Jean King Cup finals rather than the ATP Tour finals.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to that.
Right, I mean, we're going to be wrapping up this episode very, very soon. But we're going to very quickly look at what's in store at Madrid tomorrow. The order of play has been released since we started recording. So, guys, we've got Medvedev, Bublik, Świątek, Haddad, Meyer, Struff, Alcaraz, Keys, Jabeur, and then Nadal, Lehechka. Any of those float your boat? Where are your eyes looking at those matches?
Struff, Alcaraz could be.
Yeah.
That could be tasty.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Definitely. Yeah.
Nadal, Lehechka.
I mean, all eyes will be on Nadal anyway, but I feel like Alcaraz is due a bit of a test to see where he's at physically, and I think this will be it. So that would be a good one to have your eyes on. I mean, Medvedev, Bublik, that would be.
You like the drama, Molly? You said that will be a fun one.
That would be the drama. I'll be watching the drama too.
I feel like the drama is going to be in the first match of the day. Medvedev, Bublik. I mean, what quotes are we going to? I mean, the tennis TV, I think, social feed is going to be in overdrive during that match.
Yeah, I hope there'll be another Illuminati reference. That's my only hope here.
Or Bublik brings out the Illuminati reference.
Yeah.
No, it needs to be a The Others from Lost reference.
sorry. Yeah. I need to go look that up.
I'm still pushing it.
If any of our listeners do know that reference, please tweet us, because I don't understand it at all.
Right, we're gonna leave it there. But Molly, thank you so much for taking the time for joining us today at Tennis Weekly HQ. If our listeners want to follow your work, please let them know now. Where can they do so?
Thanks for having me. I mean, if they want to follow my work, I'll be writing hopefully for lots of different outlets, but I've just started a Substack. It's called But Do You Actually Like Sport? And if anyone wants to subscribe to that, I'm kind of doing a weekly take on all the kind of sports stories that catch my eye and give me a bit of insight into what it's like to be a sports reporter on the ground at events. So hopefully that'll be of interest to some on here, because there'll be a lot of tennis included. And this week's is going to be a tennis-based post. It's going to be a little bit about Sabalenka and her comments on watching WTA matches or not watching them at all. So if anyone wants to follow me, they can follow me on there, and I'll always be on X and Twitter for my sins, just tweeting out whatever nonsense I'm thinking. So
that's what Twitter's for, isn't it?
Exactly.
We will put the links in our description to all of that, your Substack. I'm looking forward to reading that article. But for now, we're going to end our episode there. We're actually going to be back later in the week. Look out for our Challengers film review, which will be out tomorrow night on YouTube, with the episode going live later in the week on Apple, Spotify, and all your podcasting favorites. So do look out for that. But listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action from the ATP and WTA tours. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us and Molly on social media. The handle for Molly is @Molly_McElwee on Twitter. And it's molly.mckelwee on Instagram. And for our feeds, you can find us at Tennis Weekly Pod, and that's on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you would like to purchase some of our lovely Tennis Weekly merch, we're going to have to get you sorted with some, Molly. It's etsy.com/shop/tennisweeklypodcast. You can email us at tennisweeklypod@gmail.com, or do check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next week at Tennis Weekly HQ for another tour catch up. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Molly.
Bye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.